Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this Thursday, the third day of August, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the madcap, merry, multimedia, real-time, zany, wacky extravaganza that is, in fact, The Horn chat room. Yeah, just run on over and pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump into the conversation. I think you will enjoy yourself immensely. It is a thorn in the side Thursday here on the Horn, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of that sort of stuff going on in the chat room. If you jump in there, you'll be met by Anatole and Hoghead and Chug a Punch and Labor Man and Ralphs and Squeaky and VT Blom, all capably moderated by Midweek Utility. Pinch hit chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Come on over. I'm there too. So there's that. Also, big thanks going out to the overnight crew of our subscribers. Thank you very, very kindly. Thanks to them. We only have $100 to raise tonight, and that $100 will finish out Chris in Germany's challenge, the getaway challenge, to assist in the bill paying and the gas buying and all the vacationing that's going to go on next week. Thank you very kindly to Chris, and thank you very kindly to everyone who has participated in helping with that effort. It doesn't, going away doesn't change what has to happen every month. So thank you very much indeed. If we can raise $100, we'll be good for the challenge, and we'll be all set to just go into a relatively miracle-free Friday on the front porch. Yeah. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, I did. Thank you very kindly, Anatole. Anatole is one of the reasons, along with the overnight crew, that we only have to raise $100 this evening. Thank you very, very, very much. If you want to help out, I trust by now, if you're a regular to the program, you know how to do that. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. If you'd like to become a subscriber via PayPal, just click the little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. If not, just put in whatever number works for you. Mr. Soros, any less than 5 digits is unacceptable. So there's that. There's the U.S. Postal Service. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. And then finally, there is a new campaign afoot. I put it together especially for people who aren't particularly fond of PayPal. over at Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. You'll find our subscription campaign. And the terms are set out there. And we're looking to, well, at this point in time, let's see, what does that work at? We need about 344, I think, 344. I can't keep track, you know, me, ciphering, bad. 344, 345 more people, and we'll have the campaign fully funded, assuming $10 a month subscriptions. So, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, if you want to help out in that regard. I'm being told, wait, what? Hold, let me just check. Oh, no. Oh, God damn it. Sorry. Don't know what's going on here. Oh, wait, I just heard the thunder. Of course. Although that does appear to still be working. Yeah, still good. All right, time out. Let me see what the hell's going on here. Be right back. All right. I've done what I can to try to get things squared around. Ben Birch tells me he'll try to get the White Rose server sorted out. He's not at a computer right now. So let me – one last thing here. Just one more message to put out. Okay, so I just tweeted out a message about that. Thanks, everybody, for letting me know that there's an issue. Head On.live has always been up and running. But because TuneIn is tied to White Rose Society, I had to find out, see if there was some way to deal with that. And now I'll try to take a deep breath and step back and... and sort of get my head back into the space for doing a program instead of sorting out technical issues. I know that sounds kind of diva-ish, but it is a pain in the ass I'm the chief cook and bottle washer here. I mean, I'm the engineer. I'm the guy behind the microphone. I'm the call screener. I'm the network manager, blah, 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 blah. So when one thing demands all of it, and usually the goal is for the program itself, the creation of the content, to command all of my attention. And everything else just sort of work around it. That's not always the case. Some days the magic works, some days it doesn't. This is one of those doesn't days. But hey, there's one good thing coming out of this. Whatever time we've lost in the last few minutes, we've lost from a three-hour program instead of a two-hour program because we're back to the normal schedule, well, regular schedule. And that means that we've still got 2 hours and 40 minutes of good conversation left to us. Which means that, and God Almighty... We have plenty to talk about. I'm sure that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, that Central Park Clampett has come to West Virginia again today. And he has, he's having a campaign rally. Yeah, really, the stupid bastard is campaigning for re-election before he's even a year into his first term. And just sort of presupposing that there's going to be a second term, and I've predicted that there will be. I mean, I can live with that. I hadn't mentioned it, but the fact of the matter is there have been threats out just a second. There have been threats out with the announcement of the Clavering rally coming up. Just a minute. Now, as soon as this Clavering rally was announced, somebody began spreading a threat, saying, let's come armed to this rally and let's run over protesters and, you know, kill a few. That was the sort of general thrust of it. Turns out the Secret Service didn't think much of it, and well, the Cabell County, West Virginia Sheriff's Department didn't really think it was anything to worry about. I mean, that's just how Trumpansies talk. It was the guy was probably just feeling an onset of a really, really nasty bout of economic anxiety. Right? Sure. That's what it all. It's just economic anxiety that makes them homicidal white wing maniacs. So I guess the Clementine Caligula will begin his sort of Faulkner-esque, Benji-esque free association stream of unconsciousness here. Maybe in a, you know, half an hour or so. What I was all prepared for when I started the program is that we're going to have a moment of sublime. We're going to be treated to a moment of sublime irony this evening. I mean, this really is like something out of the demented reign of a Caesar, or the political performance art of a fascist autocracy. Because tonight, in honor of the return of Donald J. Trump, the Tangerine Tiberius, to his beloved West Virginia, where the rubes still love him so well, the governor of this state, the state's only billionaire, the man who prided himself on telling his, in explaining his, the man who prided himself on explaining his wealth by telling what he called his Kunta Kinte story. Jim Justice will walk out onto the stage and kiss the ring of Marcus Aurelius. That in fact he's now a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Republican. Yeah. He was elected through the connivance of Joe Manchin. As a Democrat, and he only became a Democrat within the year prior to running for governor of the state of West Virginia, again at the connivance of Joe Manchin. If you look up Democrat in name only, there's a picture of Jim Justice. There has never been a greater example of a Democrat in name only than Jim Justice. And now he has reverted to his natural sort of serpent state. Nothing really changes in West Virginia out of this. Cole Barron is still the governor, and a legislature in thrall to the coal industry is still running the state. I think it probably makes Joe Manchin look kind of stupid, but that's a pretty short trip for Joe Manchin. You know who's got egg on their face? The higher-ups and the hierarchy and the mucky-mucks of the West Virginia Democratic Party. Because they were so excited about Jim Justice. Oh, mercy, they was excited. That's real excited they were. And he's a Democrat now.
Mm-hmm.
We could probably have a conversation or imagine a sort of meeting. Mr. Dante, Mr. Blankenship. Mr. Dante, would you take Mr. Justice about 9 levels down in our series of circular basements? That's right, Mr. Dante. Take him down about 9 levels because he's a betrayer. And of course, Dante in the Inferno reserved the lowest, and the ninth circle of hell. He reserved for the betrayers. Old Judas's carrot top was, according to Dante. Dante Alighieri. Judas's carrot top was in the ninth circle of hell. A couple of contemporaries from his particular culture were there too. There's a reason he's coming back to West Virginia, because apparently, we've had some discussion about this, but let's remember this. You know how they used to build Disneyland or Disney World as the happiest place on earth? Well, this is the Trumpiest place on earth. With our poisoned water, our seas of toxic waste, our mountains blown flat, our streams buried, our people poisoned, this is the Trumpiest place on earth. There won't be a price to pay for Jim Justice to put the shiv to every Democrat who voted for him. No price at all. He can run again as a Republican in 20 and probably win. The only reason he became a Democrat, after all, was to create the illusion. He couldn't win as a Republican. And he would have had to go through a primary process whereby he was assured by the cult of personality, otherwise known as the West Virginia Democratic Party. The Joe Manchin cult of personality told him, we'll get you in there. I mean, if a progressive or something pops up, we'll just throw another candidate in, a ringer, to split the vote. You'll get through. And that, of course, is exactly what happened. Sorry, I have to do a lot of communicating. Um, So I'm not surprised by this. It was breaking news that just rushed all around the interweb tubes. The New York Times got wind of it before anybody else. Even the Charleston Gazette didn't know. But there'll be a lot of crowing and ballyhooing. And the Republicans will be as insufferable as they ever are. Where's the surprise in that? But I, as one of the more, as one of that rare breed known as progressives in West Virginia, I see this as a step forward. When you clean the filth out of your house, you may, you know, if your house is infested, you may have to wind up throwing a lot of trash out after the filth is gone. You may not wind up with a single stick of furniture to sit on or a table on which to set your plate. But you will have a clean house. And you will have a place from which you can start again. And build the party the way it should be. In many ways, that effort began back in June of last year, June of 2016. Steve's asking, is that why Trump is there today, Bob, to toot his horn about flipping Jim Justice? Maybe it's been in the works since it was announced. I don't know. I tend to think it's just a sort of a lanyap, a happy accident, fortuitous, serendipitous. But maybe it is. His reputation is so far into the toilet, Trump says, that he needed to go somewhere to be adored because the stupid fucker has to be adored. He lies openly, and even when he's caught in a lie, he says, "You're lying." I mean, Jesus Christ, look at the comment about the White House. "The lying liberal fake news media said I said the White House is a dump. I would never say something like that." Well, only there are three alternatives here. One, he's just lying. Two, he didn't say it, and somebody at Golf Magazine, for Christ's sakes, or the Golf Channel or whatever, just decided to make that up about him because, of course, the golfing world is, God knows, a seething fire pit of liberals and progressives. Yeah. Or the guy's brain is so badly harmed, so thoroughly damaged, that he did say that. "In the White House, it's such a big dump. It's such a dump." And now, because the spirochetes have hollowed out his brain, he doesn't remember saying it. So, you know, we ask ourselves the question, why would a reporter for Golf Whatever make a statement like that up? And there's no good answer. So the likelihood of that being a made-up statement as opposed to an actual quote, especially in light of the fact that the person writing the article made a point of noting that he was surrounded by a lot of people when he said it, those people are called, what? Witnesses. That possibility can be eliminated. So you're either left with, he just lies to be lying, or his brain is in such a sad state that he lies and can't even keep up with them anymore. You pick. Sherlock Holmes time. After you've eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, no matter how improbable, is likely the answer. And in a way, those two choices leave you with the question of how much sympathy do you have for him? I have no sympathy for him whatsoever. And so I'm equally prepared to say, well, you know, the guy's just a pathological fucking liar. But I also, based on the things I've read, like the analysis of his speech patterns over the past 20, 25, 30 years, and the degradation thereof, I'm also willing to say that, yeah, the Spirochetes have had they've feasted mightily in the halls of Trump's brain. So he needs to come somewhere that he can just spew more of his filthy, outrageous falsehoods and not be called on it. There's a paper has been published at the Journal of Social and Political Psychology. The title of it, by Thomas F. Pettigrew, is Social Psychological Perspectives on Trump Supporters. Thomas Pettigrew is from the University of California, Santa Cruz. And he purports in his paper to explain the phenomenon of the of what makes a trumpanzee. And no, oddly enough, the first criterion is not the willingness to fling poo. The first criterion, and let's go through this list with an eye toward thinking about, say, the people who are going to show up at the Big Sandy Arena in Huntington, West Virginia this evening. They're already there. They're so excited. Oh, their hearts are beating with patriotic, authoritarian, not too particularly sharp fervor. And authoritarian's the key word. Because the first criterion identified by Professor Pettigrew is authoritarian personality syndrome. And Professor Pettigrew notes that this has to do with strict obedience to authority at the expense of personal freedom. It's also commonly associated with a lack of concern for the opinions or the needs of others. Healthcare debate, anybody? Precisely. Those with authoritarian personality syndrome often display aggression toward out-group members, submissiveness to authority, resistance to new experiences, and a rigid hierarchical view of society. Here's the key. Authoritarian personality syndrome is often triggered by fear. This is going to be a tough evening. Stand by, please. I might as well go ahead and tell you, it's been a rough day. One of my nearest and dearest and most long-standing friends died in the early morning hours of today. And it, well, that sort of thing shakes you. So that was someone calling to tell me what the plans are. So that's why I felt like I had to take the call. Let's see if we can jump back into the... one more second. I'm sorry. Stand by. Okay, hopefully that's the last one of those for a while. Authoritarian. I'm sorry, I'll get into the groove of this yet. I really will. Authoritarian personality syndrome is the thing that gets us to... people with that are triggered... For instance, when Geezer Disgustus stands up and says, "Those people are losers. They're complete disasters." It turns them on to hear that kind of shit. Criterion number two for the folks showing up at Big Sandy Arena this evening. Social dominance orientation. Professor Pettigrew describes this as being distinct but related to authoritarian personality syndrome. People who have a preference for the societal hierarchy of groups. And they prefer a situation in which high-status groups have dominance over low-status groups. And consequently, that's why his message resonates so thoroughly with people like white supremacists. That's why he beats up on people of color, immigrants, anybody he deems to be weak. According to a 2016 survey of 406 American adults, published in a peer-reviewed journal, people who scored high on both social dominance orientation and authoritarian personality syndrome were almost a lead pipe cinch to vote for Dolt 45. Then there's the third criterion, prejudice. This is that aspect that is most easily accessed by what we refer to as dog whistling. This is an appeal in appealing to these sorts of people. These are the people who said, "Hell yeah," when he started talking about Mexican rapists. Criterion four, intergroup contact. And this is what happens when you don't have any contact with people different from you. for instance, if you look at the new anti-immigrant legislation being proposed, well, what you find out is that it has the highest of levels of support among people who never come in contact with immigrants. People who live up the holler and wouldn't and couldn't tell a person couldn't differentiate between a person speaking Spanish and a person speaking Estonian or, you know, Pashtun. They have had no contact, therefore they do not conceive of other groups, other types of people, as even being human. Again, from 2016, researchers found out, and this is a quote, "The racial and ethnic isolation of whites at the zip code level is one of the strongest predictors of Trump support." Ta-da! The less contact you have with people nominally different from you, the more likely you are to be biased against them. And this state is, without a doubt, one of the whitest states in the USA. And then number five. Criterion number five for describing and predicting the average garden variety Trumpanzee. Bobby Azarian provided this breakdown. And I think he did a pretty good job for Raw Story. He says that relative deprivation is occurs when you're not getting something you think you're entitled to. It's that icky feeling when you think that somebody is getting something that you should have, but they shouldn't. This is the brainy explanation of that economic anxiety. Yeah. Bobby Azarian writes, "These Trump supporters are experiencing relative deprivation and are common among the swing states like Ohio, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. This kind of deprivation is specifically referred to as relative as opposed to absolute because the feeling is often based on a skewed perception of what one is entitled to." And he points out the fact that the average the median annual income of Trumpanzees in the United States is $72,000, but they feel like they'd have more if it weren't for all those Mexican rapists and homosexuals and LGBTs and uppity women and those people that, you know, the skin is darker than a brown paper bag and right. And I'll bet you that if you had a questionnaire filled out this evening in West Virginia, little bells and whistles would go off with practically every person entering the arena. But of course, we've got ever so much more. I mean, that's not all there is this evening. Oh, there's something pretty. I mean, this is just this is hillbilly bias on my part to talk about this story first. But Geezer Disgustus is really going to need some love this evening, because the news came out via the Wall Street Journal today that Bob Mueller has gotten busy, and from a special prosecutor standpoint, pretty damn quickly, because according to the Wall Street Journal, he has already impaneled a grand jury in the investigation which he is leading. Generally speaking, you do not impanel a grand jury just to cover your ass. You impanel a grand jury to present to them evidence that you think, in the light most favorable to yourself, to your own you're presenting evidence that it is A, more likely than not that a crime has been committed, and B, more likely than not that the person you're talking about is the person who committed the crime. Those are the two basic criteria for a grand jury. So I think we can satisfy ourselves in thinking that Bob Mueller, in what is a relatively short period of time, has already reached a determination that crimes have been committed and has a pretty damn good idea of who committed them. And by the way, the standard that the grand jury will use is merely a standard of more likely than not. It is more likely than not that a crime has been committed. It is more likely than not that the person who is alleged to have committed the crime is the person who committed the crime. And then you get into the elements of the various crimes, and is it more likely than not that that crime... Right, you understand. The Wall Street Journal says... The Wall Street Journal quotes Stephen I. Vladek, a law professor at the University of Texas, who says, this is yet a further sign that there is a long-term, large-scale series of prosecutions being contemplated and being pursued by the special counsel. If there was already a grand jury in Alexandria looking at Flynn, there would be no need to reinvent the wheel for the same guy. This suggests that the investigation is bigger and wider than Flynn, and perhaps substantially so. Jared, Ellick, Don Jr., you know, Udi and Cudi, Uday and Kuse, Ivanka, Trump himself. Yeah. Now, with this news out, you want to engage into some in some real. Exciting speculation. Well, what if he announced the trans ban via Twitter? What if he was to stand in front of Isaac and Sandra were mulling this over on Twitter earlier today. What if he was to stand in front of the Hillbilly Faithful in Huntington this evening and announce, I'm looking at Rob Mueller and I'm going to say, you're fired. All of these possibilities create circles within circles. Because we are reaching a perilous point with regard to our system of governance, alleged self-governance. Because it's all predicated on the idea that we all agree to it. But the whole thing falls apart like a house of cards or a sand castle with the tide coming in. If any of it's challenged, what happens if he tells Bob Mueller you're fired and Bob Mueller says, well, you don't have the authority? Iron Fire is with Rod Rosenstein. Well, then you're in the Saturday Night Massacre scenario where you have to fire Rod. He has to fire Rod Rosenstein to get somebody in there to fire Mueller. We're a hell of a lot closer to a complete constitutional breakdown than I would suspect the vast majority of this country suspects. I think I used suspect twice there. Still works. Remember me? I'm the one who said we entered a constitutional crisis on January the 20th, 2017. I have not changed my opinion. My certainty of this fact has only grown deeper. It's getting weirder and weirder. And depending on which of the two possibilities you buy into, that Trump is either demented and can't remember his own lies or even what he had previously said, or that he's just a pathological liar, at this point in time, it's merely a thermometer gauging how high the heat is rising. Oh, and by the way, we talked a little bit about the golf.com article. Alan Shipnuck wrote that article. He's the one who reported that Trump said, the White House is a real dump. To which Trump responded, it's totally untrue, it's fake news. Well, reporters don't take kindly to being called liars, because if reporters turn out to be liars, that's pretty much the end of their reporting career. And so over on the golf.com podcast yesterday, he said, no, it wasn't fake news.
This episode of the golf.com podcast is brought to you by the USGA.
So we're not going to run 48 minutes of audio. Being a good journalist, Alan Shipnuck reached out to the White House before publishing the article. He spoke directly to Hope Hicks. Hope Hicks demanded a retraction. Shipnuck reports that he said, it's not a lie. The president said this in front of 8 or 9 members and staffers at Bedminster. The week of the U.S. Open, I heard the same story told by 2 or 3 different other sources. This is certainly a moment that has already passed into legend at Trump Bedminster. It might be inconvenient for her boss, and she might wish he didn't say it, but it is not a lie. So that puts the ball squarely in Trump's, or in his supporters' court. Which is it? Is he a pathological liar that makes Richard Nixon look like the Quaker that he professed to be? Or is his brain so deeply compromised, so seriously ill. That he just can't remember what he says. And that is suitable for discussion. And the interesting thing is that it's kind of a no-win situation where Trump is concerned. Of course, he can always just tell another lie. But that's the problem with those. Sooner or later, you lose track of how many you've told. And it becomes more and more complicated. So, with a few fits and starts, we've managed to get through the first hour of the program. For those of you who stuck around, I thank you for your patience in dealing with what we were dealing with. Me and that mouse in my pocket. All the technical snafus and what have you. For the podcast listeners, I apologize for the giant gaping silences in the podcast. I'm sorry. So we're going to take a break. And come back and see what other mischief we can get into. Okay? And again, we're trying to raise $100 this evening to finish out Chris in Germany's challenge. Just $100. 10 at 10, 5 at 20, 1 at 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, etc. And like I said, that'll put us in the position of not having to have another Friday on the Front Porch miracle. By the way, in keeping with shout-outs, thank you. Thank you to our new Patreon subscriber, Nick. Thank you very kindly. Nick has been listening to you nightly and via podcast for quite some time after learning of you through the Maloya program several years ago. I love your program and the insight from you and the community each night. I just subscribed through Patreon. I'm at a point now financially where I can afford it. I just wish I could have done so sooner. Thank you sincerely for all that you do. You're a voice of reason and sanity in a crowd of hate, fear, and delusion. I hope my subscription helps, and I hope others like me, who've been listening a long time but haven't yet felt compelled or able to contribute, will do so too. Maybe someday I'll work up the courage to join the conversation. Thanks again. Signed, Nick. There's precious little courage involved, Nick. Jump in any time. You will be more than merely welcome. You will be. It'll be like. You'll be like family, because this is the Horn Family Community Congregation. So a little break, and then the Green News Report, this being Thursday, is on its way. This is listener-supported conversation radio for Thursday, the third day of August, 2017. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thank you. going.
It's Thursday, August 3rd, 2017.
2,000 acres home to more than 400 bird and plant species could soon see a border wall cut through the northern side of the refuge.
DHS waives environmental laws, prepares to bulldoze wildlife refuge for Trump's border wall. Court of Appeals orders EPA to enforce methane regulations. Now, Great Britain to phase out all diesel and gasoline cars. Plus...
The next buy I do is my next car, which will be an electric vehicle.
Shell Oil CEO says his next car will be electric.
Really?
Yes.
Cool. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green...
I'm going to interrupt that. Sorry, Brad. Sorry, Desi. But I'm going to run over and just check in with the madness in Huntington, West Virginia.
And it is so popular. This state has many retired military members, and we thank them, and we thank their families and spouses for the patriotic service. They have been incredible. We in America honor our great heroes. This week in the East Room of the White House, I awarded the Medal of Honor to a true American hero, Specialist 5 James C. McLuhan. Many of you watch as I gave Jim the medal. He courageously saved the lives of his fellow soldiers.
Oh, Jesus. Lord Jesus does not kill you because you don't believe in him. He sacrificed himself to save all of us. Please research the wisdom of Christianity. Stay out of the comments. Oh, my God. How do I close this shit? I don't want to see these. Make it go away. Oh, well. Oh, man, they're hooting now. He's got his back to the microphone again. He's doing the Mussolini thing.
Woody received a Medal of Honor from President Harry Truman for his actions in Iwo Jima.
In Iwo Jima? He was down in the volcano?
Woody is the last surviving Marine
who received
a Medal of Honor in World War II. Woody, tonight we honor you, we salute you, and we thank you for what you've done for all of us. Thank you, Woody. Now we must protect the birthright of freedom that patriots like Jim and Woody have earned for us.
They always put a couple of hot blondes behind him. You ever notice that?
Their tears, their hard work, and their bravery. All across the country, Americans of every kind are
coming welfare,
together
food stamps, and Medicaid.
With one simple goal. Make America great again. The stock market reached yet another all-time, in history, all-time high today, boosting the retirement savings, hopefully, of everybody in this room. Have you all been helped? I think so.
Half the people in that room don't have retirement savings.
Is at a 16-year low. But don't forget, and I will never forget, the millions and millions of people out there that want jobs that don't register on the unemployment rolls because they gave up looking for jobs. So I accept the number, but honestly, we all know there are millions of people out there that we love. They're forgotten men and women. And they're looking for jobs, and they're going to have them because I have factories coming back into this country. You've seen that. They're coming back. We have auto plants expanding and coming back. They're coming into Michigan. They're really coming into Michigan. And they're coming into Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Well, they're coming all over the place. Get a tissue. Lock him up. Lock him up.
Economic growth has surged to 2.6% nationwide. You have to understand what that means. Nobody thought that number was going to happen. And it's 3% growth in West Virginia. I wonder how that happened. 3% growth.
Oh, I know.
West Virginia, you're leading the average. When was the last time you heard that, West Virginia? You're leading the country's average.
I swear there's a guy behind him with a red MAGA hat on and a black T-shirt. Looks like a Hardly Rideable logo on it. I think dude is on the verge of speaking in tongues, and he might even have to whip out he might have to handle a snake for a little bit. God almighty.
This November 8th, Election Day, he said, Mr. President, honestly, you're doing better. I said, better?
Hey, look, Mark Valance on the comment section. Fuck you, Jew CNN, Jew News CNN. Stay classy, Trump. Oh, Fire Mueller. That started. Yeah. I don't know what that means. Trump equals Batman. I'm going to let this roll for a minute. Not the audio. I kind of wanted to see if maybe there was something about Mueller, but he won't. He won't mention Mueller. The rubes here think he's the second coming of Christ anyway. I'm just going to keep the video rolling silently for, I don't know, maybe when they bring out, maybe when they bring out Jim Justice and Trump drops trowel and Jim Justice buries his head so far up Trump's ass that you can see his smiling face when Trump opens his own little oral anal cavity. In the meantime, yeah, why not? Let's go over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, you there?
That's why I said, hey, Scott.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not used to this new interface for Skype on the phone. The buttons are different, and I can never tell whether I've got the mute thing on.
Oh, hang on a minute. Hang on. Stand by. The big reveal is here. Here's Jim Justice.
First of all, what an incredible honor, and thank
don't,
you for
don't,
coming.
Don't go away. Don't go away, Scott.
And thank
I'll be
our
back.
Great president for being here.
Stroke, 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 stroke.
I've got to tell you a couple stories real quick.
Announcement, we are deporting Jews, Arabs. That's from the chat room.
In the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've been there to present an idea on coal and an idea on manufacturing. I've had the great opportunity to be with our president. Now, let me tell you just this.
Tell us the Kunta Kinte story, Jim.
I have to be really serious with you just a moment. I have to tell you that the last session of our legislature, I tried with all my soul Now, I can tell you, if you'll just give me just a moment, this man and myself are not politicians. We ran to get something done. We ran and gave up part of our lives. We ran because we want nothing. We ran as our founding fathers did years and years ago to serve. Now,
yeah, because he's in direct succession to Benjamin Franklin.
To my soul, sure. That no one loves West Virginia more than I.
Bullshit, I do.
And in the last session, I would tell you that there was some greatness passed with our roads and so on.
So
on. But there was way too much pain. Now listen to me and listen really good. We hurt a lot of people. We hurt our vets and our teachers and our disabled and our weak, and we walked away from the old. Now I can promise you just this. I came to only get something done.
Oh, apparently they just abused a protester.
Let me just say this to you as bluntly as I can say it. West Virginia, at the altar, when we had it done, like it or not like it, but the Democrats walked away from me. Now,
today, this is pure fantasy, by the way.
With lots of prayers and lots of thinking, today I'll tell you as West Virginians, I can't help you anymore being a Democrat governor.
Oh, the dude in the Harley t-shirt just, he's going to have to change his trousers.
So tomorrow, I will be changing my registration to Republican. As a coach, I would tell you it's time to run another play. I would also tell you this, and pay please close attention to this. My mom and dad were staunch lovers of Ronald Reagan, staunch Republicans. My mom and dad are
and so
no
were you, dumbass, until a year and a half ago.
In heaven right now, and they're both saying the same thing, but my mom is saying it more profoundly, and that is she's saying, Jimmy, it's about damn time you came to your senses.
See, this is so much fermented bullshit because the fucker was a Republican until a year and a half ago. Really?
Now, let me go one step further and say just this. What in the world is wrong with us as peoples? Have we not heard enough about the Russians? I mean, to our God in heaven above, think about it. The stock market's at 22,000. And this country has hope, and we're on our way. Now, this man is a really dear friend of mine. But you know what else is unbelievable? This man now has a chief of staff that all of us can pronounce his first name.
Ho, 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 ho.
And you know what that name is today? It's Sir. Think about that. Now, I'll end by saying we're a long ways from being perfect.
There's mistakes made, and change is tough. But I can tell you this. This man is a reflection of his kids, his children. Eric Trump has been under my vehicle in the back of the woods changing a tire.
Well, that's okay. His own daddy threw him under the bus. So, you know, maybe that wasn't a great line.
And Ivanka and Jared, even though Jared is our great son-in-law, are so good it's off the chart.
God bless them all! God bless them all!
I'll end by saying very quickly, this man is a good man. He's got a backbone. He's got real ideas. He cares about America. He cares about us in West Virginia. And most importantly of all, you know what? He has made us, as common everyday Americans, feel good and be proud of who we are.
Common everyday friend, white Americans.
Our great president, Donald J. Trump.
Waddle off. Waddle off, Judas.
I want to thank your great governor. Having Big Jim as a Republican is such an honor, I will tell you. Such an honor.
Just like it was a year and a half ago.
Fantastic man, a fantastic guy. And thank you, Jim, very much. All over the nation, they're watching, and they really appreciate that. And we have another friend with us tonight who voted for us on health care.
Us? Him and that mouse
in
his pocket?
And honestly, how the Republicans and the Democrats let us down on that is hard to believe. Repeal and replace, hard to believe.
Yeah.
Hard to believe. Senators, but a senator that voted for it, Shelley Moore Capito, who is here with us tonight.
Oh, God, Shelley Moore Capito. Yeah, as Asa points out, justice is going for the how far can you ram the smallest penis in the cosmos down your throat record. Bravo, Jim Justice. Bravo. Yeah, let's get back and check in with Scott. You there now? Oh, Scott. Scott, did you go for coffee? Little Sanka? Hey, Scott. Meanwhile, note coming in from our buddy Reverbo, the human boy. Okay, let's try this again. Are you there, Scott? Stand by. Reverbo points out, God, talk about getting stupider by listening to somebody. Did this one even get past the third grade? Utterly embarrassing. Oh, he's an idiot. He's an idiot who was born with a silver foot in his mouth. I mean, the Kunta Kinte story is real. Hey, Scott. Scott, I know you said you're...
Hello?
Yeah, there you are. Yeah, Scott.
How about now?
I got you.
Okay. Yeah, I like this new Skype interface on the phone. It's hard to tell when the mute thing is working and then it doesn't go off after you put it on.
Well, you're on.
Okay, good. Did not
Well, I don't, wait, Scott, before you go any further, what? Man, you never had Skype troubles like this before.
Wait, hang on.
It's like something's shorting out.
Hi, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it's my earphones, my earbuds.
Are they Bluetooth?
No, they're plug-in, but I've had them probably well over a year, and I use them every day. So I'll just get a new pair, and for now I'll just hold the phone up because I think it is the they're El Cheapo, earbuds, and no biggie. But no, for some reason I didn't associate the name Jim Justice as governor with the guy who told the Kunta Kinte story.
Yep, same one.
But now that I've seen him, his eyes appear to be a little too close together. I don't know if that means anything, but he doesn't look like he's very bright. I mean,
no, he's dumb. He's really dumb. He's stupid.
And the Trump brothers are like that a little bit. They've got, obviously they have very strong Aryan stock, in their background. And by Aryan, I mean, as white as you can, blindingly white. But there gets a point, it's almost like the royal family, with all the intermarrying and the intermingling of the DNA and all that stuff. There comes a time in certain, by the time the generations come down, a good deal of begatting has occurred, and they see, you look at them and they don't look quite right. They're like, there's not exactly Banjo Boy in the film Deliverance, but approaching that. You could see that a couple of more sessions of begatting amongst themselves, and you might run into that issue. The Trump brothers kind of have that look as well. And with the royal family, the weird thing is, it was a good thing Princess Diana hooked up with Charles, because Harry and William are not bad-looking young men. they didn't get the curse, or not the curse, but the...
No, that's the good part of it, is that Diana added a few thimblefuls of water to the gene pool, because the House of Windsor gene pool had pretty much become a muddy hoof print.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but anyway, is that the big deal? Yesterday, Trump, I don't know what the venue was, but he was talking to the press about something, and he said, and tomorrow we're going to West Virginia, and I promise you're going to love it. We have a big announcement.
Yeah.
Was this it?
Yeah, it was, I think.
Because they kind of oversold it.
If you don't know West Virginia politics, if you do know West Virginia politics, it's an oversell, because Trump's been a Republican all along.
You mean Justice?
Yeah.
Yeah, the headline then is Jim Justice changes his mind again.
Yep.
First he was wishy, then he was washy, now he's wishy again.
Hey.
That's not earth-shattering.
But the thing is,
news.
It wasn't that the Democrats didn't fuck him over in the legislature. That was Republicans.
But what it always is, They will. They have. I don't know why they're so keen on governing, because that's the last thing they're interested in doing.
They're keen on power. They don't have a damn bit of interest in governing, Scott.
Yeah. But it's like, if I didn't know better, and maybe I do know better,
you would think that they're not about, they have no interest in it at all. What they're interested in is fucking rat fucking the government. Because it is a threat to them, or it poses a potential threat to them. Who is that guy, the tax idiot? He wants to get the government down to the size where you can drown it in a bathtub?
Grover Norquist.
Oh, Grover, yeah, yeah. He is a piece of work. But anyway. So what the whole point of this, I mean, obviously, Jim Justice changing his mind is scant justification for a presidential visit, you know, a rally, a re-election rally, which is laughable. You know, it's like running. You know, if you don't like the conversation, change the subject. And I would say, I dare say, in the last couple of weeks, Trump does not care for the conversation, and he's liking it less and less, wouldn't you think?
Well, that's why he had to come to West Virginia, like I said, Scott.
Yeah.
He needed to be able to talk to the rubes.
Yeah.
Because this is one of the last places on Earth where he has anything resembling a high approval rating.
Wasn't West Virginia a state that it did, they delivered more powerfully for him than any other state?
It's the Trumpiest state in the Union. Yeah.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised? It's such a beautiful state. Haven't been there for some years, but geez. They don't know what they have. Or maybe they do and they don't care. You know?
Yeah.
Trashing it is not, you know. Because natural beauty is just that. It's once you've gotten it to...
But it does rejuvenate, Scott. I saw a photograph the other day, for instance, with a good bit of background in it, of the last execution in the state of West Virginia, and it was the 1890s, and it was in Jackson County. There wasn't a tree left in sight. This state was entirely... I mean, you look at it on Google Earth, whatever now, flyover, it looks like one great big forest for the most part. There wasn't a tree. There was barely a tree left in this state in 1900. There's like one stand of old growth virgin hemlocks up near the Pennsylvania state line. That's it. So I mean, it can be rejuvenated, but you know, things like blowing mountains up and burying streams, you can't fix that.
No. Oh, that's what I was getting at. There's certain types of damage that even cosmetically you can't bring it back even close to what it was. And that's sad. And watching that Jim Justice just now, you know, I don't know anything about the guy other than what you've said over the months, but it's, you know, it just gives me a heightened appreciation for the state that you're in. And by state, I don't mean geographical. I mean the condition. The conditions under which you live and exist. It's like, Jesus. You know, out here, we don't know how lucky we've got it. All except for Punky, who's being very much a malcontent. He has
he was good for us on Malloy, but not so much tonight.
Well, he has been a pain in the ass, frankly, ever since I got up today. And there's no reason for it. Earlier, he was on top of his cage, shrieking at the upright vacuum cleaner, which I had left in the room overnight, simply because I was too lazy to put it back where it goes, you know, after using it yesterday. And he's standing there, hunched over, staring at the goddamn vacuum cleaner, shrieking his birdie guts out. And I kept reminding him what a premium there was on birdie guts, and he really shouldn't shriek them out that way. And, you know, he just continued and continued. And I finally, trying to apply logic and child-rearing skills to the situation, got up off my fat ass, picked up the vacuum cleaner, carried it into the kitchen, put it in the corner where it belongs. I didn't wrap the cord up. I figured there are limits even when it comes to trying to deal with a bird, you know. But I just wanted to get it out of the room to see if that would quell the continual shrieking. And it did. But now, I guess because I'm on the phone talking to you, you know, they're like children. They truly are. Yes, you, Punky. You little bastard. I love you. But you're still a... Well, never mind.
Yeah, there we go. Right.
And then yesterday, as part of, you know, the standard housekeeping, I had to change the paper in his cage and do a little birdie station keeping. Now, normally, I'll carry him into the bathroom and let him sit up on the shower curtain rod and contemplate things while I do it, because they get upset, you know, if you start screwing around with their little domicile. But would he go in there with me? No. I tried three times. He kept flying back. And I said, okay, I'll put you in your cage. I'll shut the gate, and you can watch me clean your stuff. And he was behaving so frantically and so agitated.
Oh, poor little guy.
Well, it was as if I had brandished menacingly a box of shake and bake for cockatiel in his general direction. I mean, and all I was doing was making his little home a happier, cleaner, nicer place.
Yeah, but he didn't know that. And he was afraid you were evicting him.
And did I get any thanks? No.
No. Of course not.
No, and you know, and they, if he lived far away, he would be one of those children who never came to visit. Never came to visit. All those Sundays, week after week, month after month, year after year.
That's how they
are. And do they come to say hello? Pop, how you doing? No. No. It's terrible. I raised them better. What the hell am I saying? I don't have kids.
Well, by the way, I thought I would mention, I've been talking about vacation next week and everything. It takes some... The Orange Menace,
yeah,
is going to take a 17-day vacation tomorrow.
I saw that.
Remember when he, because he doesn't. Remember when he gave such unmitigated grief to Barack Obama every time he took 2 days off?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. See, you know, like I said, remember when, because he doesn't. There was something that was said about Ronald Reagan years ago. I forget who said it, but it went something like this. The supreme irony is that there... The supreme irony is that the only person in the United States who didn't know that Ronald Reagan was president was Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, that's about right.
It was true.
And there toward
and,
the
and
end,
we're getting, you know, I think we're getting there even as every day with Trump. Yeah, Jesus, he spent 13 of the 28 weekends he spent in office away from the White House.
Yeah.
This after a guy, after he tweeted back in August of 2011, Barack Obama played golf yesterday. Now he heads to a 10-day vacation at Martha's Vineyard. Nice work ethic. And, of course, there was, I'm going to be working for you. I'm not going to have time to play golf. Yeah.
Well, and the thing about it is, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going, and the going is getting tough. And now he may sell it like saying, yeah, it's a working vacation and, you know, Congress is in their recess, so I thought I would grab a few days. You know, the same old happy horse shit that they normally use when they try to impress you with what hard work and good job they're doing. But you got to know that he is to the extent that he's aware of anything, there's got to be some part of him which is panicky. Simply because he strikes me as the kind of a guy who does that, even though he's not aware that that's what's going on, because it shows up in his reaction to it. You know, constantly projecting, is, I think, is the psychological term. The problem that one has, they, quote, project it upon other people, the very same thing that they have. And on some level, they're aware that it's really all about them, but they're loath to admit it, simply because, well, as I said going up to the election, I said, this man, you know, if he is elected, the only tool that we have in our arsenal, or an effective tool, is the fact that capitalize upon the fact that he doesn't like to look bad, and he doesn't like to have judgment. He doesn't have like to have his judgment questioned, you know, no matter how horrid it is. And that's the thing. That's his flaw. And that's where, you know, we'll be able to weaken him, hopefully, by capitalizing on the fact that sooner or later it's going to hit him square in the face that he's a fuck-up, that he's always known on some level that he is.
And I think that's the kind of thing that keeps him up at 3 o'clock in the morning, don't you?
Well, yeah.
I mean, God Almighty, did you catch this one earlier today, Scott? The Secret Service has walked out on Trump Tower.
No, well, I didn't hear that. What was that about?
The Washington Post reported that the office space for the Secret Service, is just no. We're gonna go somewhere else. They moved to a trailer 50 feet outside the building because Trump was arguing with the Secret Service over the terms of the lease.
In other words, their offices or their quarters there.
He was trying to shake down the Secret Service for more fucking money.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret, and I guess it's okay to say this. The people who have that job, I know in the uniform division, which is the branch that my brother was in, but I've heard that it's also quite true in the, you know, the dress suit division, non-uniform division. They do talk about the protectees and their family. You know, it's scuttlebutt. It's workplace gossip. Well, not gossip, but you know how it is. You're shooting the shit in the break room, and sooner or later,
sure,
if you're in an office situation or whatever, the topic comes around to the boss or the boss's boss or the coworker on the line or the brother of the boss.
Or the boss's obnoxious kids or, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And you know that, make no mistake, while they're there to serve and protect the protectee, they do it willingly because that's what they do. The Secret Service hasn't always been this way, but they're quite the good, responsible organization. Although at one time there were questions about that, and it doesn't matter, usually doesn't matter who's in office. But I've heard some of the things that they used to say about Hillary. And they did not like her. Didn't like Bill. Didn't like Bill at all.
No, because they're authoritarians too, Scott.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, and you don't often think of that. You know, and you got to figure, I mean, I would not be, I mean, I couldn't be a Secret Service person anyway, because I've got too many fucking skeletons. But there's no way that I would jump in front of harm's way for this guy. Are you kidding me?
Speaking of which, I know it's taken up a lot of, we've had some conversations about this. our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan, who I guess got mad at me over the whole Jill Stein thing. Haven't heard from Jim in a long time.
No, I haven't either.
But Politico had a real big magazine piece today. How the CIA came to doubt the official story of JFK's murder.
I didn't see that. I will have to look at that.
Thousands of pages of long-secret assassination-related documents released by the National Archives last week show that within a few years of Kennedy's murder, some in the CIA began to worry internally that the official story was wrong, an alarm the agency never sounded publicly.
Well, you do know that when the Warren Commission was supposedly investigating, that this both, not so much the FBI, although there was some of it going on, but the CIA basically withheld stuff. The CIA as an organization went so far as to destroy things so they didn't have to turn them in as part of the investigation. And see, I've never maintained that the official body, the CIA, was behind or took part in the assassination of Kennedy. I've only said that elements of that organization had a hand in it. And again, when you're dealing
what this story seems to document is that they dropped the ball. They dropped the ball in terms of Oswald's contacts in Mexico. You know, the visit he paid to Mexico, Cuban embassy, Russian embassy. What, a couple of months before the assassination.
Yeah.
And that they completely missed out on what may have been Oswald's motive, if indeed, you know, Oswald did it. And, you know, I think there are at least maybe three or four people in the country who still believe that Oswald acted alone.
Do you know what we call them?
What?
The term lone nutters.
Ah, okay. Was it possible that JFK's assassination was, directly or indirectly, blowback for the spy agency's plots to kill Castro? Because they reproduce in this article an AP News story talking about how the idea being that Oswald took it upon himself to kill Kennedy before Kennedy could kill Castro, which doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, but, you know, you'll have that.
Well, I'll check that out.
But here's the other thing. There's another trove of documents due to be released in a couple of months under a law that was passed in 1992.
Yeah.
And only one person, Scott... Only one person can stop that from happening. You know who that is, right?
Yeah, I do. He's in West Virginia right now, and it ain't you.
And the CIA and the CIA would like for him to do that.
Yeah, because this you saw Oliver Stone's movie JFK, and probably recall the heat that came down on him and Warner Brothers and everybody connected with the film.
Oh yeah, and I read Jim. I read Jim's daddy's book. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing that a lot of people don't realize is, it was as a direct result of Oliver Stone's film JFK, that the organization that was ordered by Daddy Bush, basically. Was set up to go through all the JFK-related documents from all branches of government. And as people connected in the documents would die, they would be released. Because that's one of the things, it's not just security matters, it's if operatives are still around, they can't be made known. Okay, but once they die, usually after a period of time, it can be disclosed who it was. Otherwise, they black it out. Well, these are the final documents. The ones in October are the ones that mostly were held back for reasons of security, supposedly. Like, I don't know, Oswald's tax records. Now, what possible reason would the government have for holding back Oswald's tax records? And some have said that he was getting paid either by the FBI or the CIA or a front organization for one of those agencies. And that would be money that would have to be declared. And even if it was listed as the XYZ company on the 1099 or whatever, people would be able to trace it and figure out who that really was. But yeah, Trump is the only one who can put the kibosh on it. And I don't think he will, simply because you remember that deal with Ted Cruz's daddy? He seems to be all about conspiracies. The only way that he would is if it comes out that Oswald was somehow behaving on behalf of the Soviets. That would be the only conceivable reason I could think of offhand that Trump would put his thumb on the release of the documents in October.
Well, you know, it's not that far away now, is it?
No, and that article was in Politico?
Yeah, Politico magazine.
All right, I'll check that out because I usually...
Yeah, politico.com/magazine.
Yeah, I've followed that damn case since I was 9 years old, and I usually stay up on it.
No, there's no pun intended, there's no smoking gun. But it does make abundantly clear that the American people were not and have never been told the entire truth.
Well, and one of the big batches of documents that were released within the last 10 years, researchers learned a lot from that stack of documents. And it was like tens of thousands of pages, maybe hundreds of thousands. And God bless them, there's a dedicated cadre of serious researchers on the JFK case who are not crazies, they're not zanies, they're not conspiracy buffs or conspiracy theorists. They are what Gore Vidal used to refer to as conspiracy analysts. And they basically take what can be verified to at least some decent extent and add that to the column of stuff that we know. And they are very good when it comes to connecting dots and seeing how stuff fits within the overall pattern, because this is the granddaddy of puzzles, you know? I would say the first 30 years of the study of this case, basically all we got were the four corners of the puzzle and maybe a scattering of interior pieces. But that last batch of documents about 10 or 12 years ago, I think it was, really gave some valuable information to the researchers. And they're hoping that whatever's released that makes up this batch of final documents will do that even a couple of steps better. Because the truth ultimately can be known, or is as close as we can get to it, but it's got to be based on good documents. And if they're not being released, you can only speculate based on what you do know, what might be in them, or how it all might fit.
Exactly. Well, Scott, I'm gonna run along. Hopefully, soothe or calm or whatever, little punky. He seems real distraught this evening.
But, yes, I don't know
but
why.
I'm not in the best shape either. No. So I understand.
Yeah, really, but do you shit every 20 minutes on average?
We're not going to talk about that.
Because cockatiels do. It's one of those little fascinating facts.
I'll just say I'm not a cockatiel.
Well, good for you.
Yep.
Good for you.
Yep.
All right, Bob.
All right, you take care, Scott.
See ya.
Bye now. Let's check back in with... It's like a train wreck. Can't turn away.
Promises to our great veterans. Thank you, veterans. Today we announced new telehealth services to help our veterans get the care they need, where and when they need it, far advanced, and it is so popular. This state has many retired military...
I can't... It just gets to be... You get to where you're feeling your own, you can feel your IQ points falling. Let's put it that way. Ron and Raleigh, a simple way to prove the Warren Commission is BS. All they have to do is exhume John Connolly and weigh the bullet fragments in his wrist. If they end up combined with the pristine single bullet being heavier than a new bullet, it'll prove Arlen Specter's theory was BS. You know who and Lamar Waldron have written a well-researched book on the subject. Somehow I don't think they're going to be exhuming John Connolly anytime soon. I don't see that happening. There's something existentially exhausting about this monumental stupidity. That is Trump. Is it that it's painful? It's painful to feel like you're watching. Because see, we on the left are accused of not loving our country, because. The definition of loving our country is, as propounded by the white wing and the authoritarians, that definition is one of, you know, blind obedience to authority. And we are not, and we are never going to be capable of that. And every time this ignorant misanthrope opens his mouth, I feel like my country dies a little bit more. The immigration business, and how, you know, if we can just stop the flow of immigrants into the United States, there will be happy bands of white people out there picking lettuce. And even that is an uncomfortable thing to talk about in such terms, because what we're saying in a situation in such what we're saying is that, but it's historically true. The United States saves its shittiest, dirtiest, most low-paying, miserable, back-breaking jobs for the people who are new to these shores, that it's some sort of a sacrifice that we demand of them in order to prove that they're worthy to be here, that they must reduce themselves almost to the level of indenture to be here. And that's not what this country's about. Not by a long shot. And short of, I mean, how do you make working in a chicken killing plant just killing chickens all day long. How do we make that something that precious little white snowflakes are going to want to do? Well, son, when you grow up, you can work at a chicken processing plant, just like I did. How do you do that? There are there are people right now doing jobs that if immigrants, documented and weren't doing them, would not get done. But Trump wants to prioritize immigration into the United States for English speakers? Here's a hint. If you've had enough privilege to learn English in, say, China, you're not going to want to come here and pick lettuce. But then again, when we start talking about these things, we have to talk about capitalism. And we have to talk about massive scale corporate agriculture. I read an article about Queen Elizabeth the other day. Imagine that. Believe me, it was an accident. But one of the things that they were talking about, her diet. And if you want to live up into your high 90s, you know, being Queen of England's a pretty good start. But she won't eat fruit out of season. Say it's Wimbledon time, the article noted that she probably eats strawberries every day, but bring her a plate of strawberries in January and she'll send it back. And she says, that's not supposed to be here. Strawberries don't grow in England in January. But we want what we want, and we want it now. And it's a big part of our hydrocarbon economy. Either by boat or by plane, we send lobsters. By plane. There's no boats to Las Vegas, for Christ's sakes. We send lobsters to Las Vegas. Lots of them, every day. From Maine, Massachusetts. Oysters are put on planes and flown alive, you know, in the shell, to a little podunk pissant place like Charleston, West Virginia. We put grapes on boats and send them from Chile to Los Angeles, and they get on trucks and they wind up in Appalachia. And the stuff that is grown seasonally here, well, we don't think about slaughterhouses when we see meat in the grocery store, and we don't think about 7-year-olds with bags on their backs when we see the grapes or the cherries. But we're going to favor English speakers coming into the United States. Better eat that fucking salad right now, because under that, it ain't, no, unless you grow you some lettuce. And, you know, well, I mean, that's just, oh my God, that's funny. Hackers got into a road sign in California. They made it read, "Trump has herpes." Caltrans sign on I-80. Eastbound on the near the exit to the University of Cal Davis. It's been corrected by now. You can't put big words on those light. No, spirochetes is too many letters. And then, of course, there's the issue of, and this was, you know, this was this morning. Shit's been changing all day long. The release of the transcripts, you know, we heard about the disastrous phone call between Malcolm Trumbull and Trump back in late January, a week after he became president, where he started screaming at one of our dearest, nearest allies, you know, the Prime Minister of Australia. And on the same day, he had a conversation with Enrique Peña Nieto, the president of Mexico. And the Washington Post got hold of the transcripts. I guess the rubes in the audience down at the Big Sandy Arena, which was far from full, I finally saw a wide shot. I guess the rubes don't read the Washington Post or any... Well, hell, who am I kidding? The rubes don't read. They get it all from Fox. But this came out of the conversation. On the wall, you and I both have a political problem. My people stand up and say Mexico will pay for the wall. No, dumbass, they don't stand up and say that. You told them that. See, you can't remember one lie from a minute to the next. And your people probably say something in a similar but slightly different language. Really? Spanish and English are similar but slightly different. I have to have Mexico pay for the wall. I have to. I've been talking about it for a two-year period. President Peña Nieto said, my position has been and will continue to be very firm, saying that Mexico cannot pay for the wall. This did not go over well with the Clementine Caligula. You can't say that to the press. The press is going to go with that, and I cannot live with that. But the big takeaway on that was when he said, listen, it's really not that big a deal, but politically it's a really big deal. In other words, he knew he'd been lying all along, but he also knew that he had a very, very dangerous base filled with racists and bigots and xenophobes that he had to try to figure out a way to keep happy. You can't say that. How about that? He thinks he's president of the president of Mexico. You can't say that. He's madder than a hatter. 18 minutes past the hour. We still have $100 to raise this evening to finish off Chris's challenge and to finish off fundraising for this Thursday, the third day of August. Let's run over and check in for a minute with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Been better, but I try. At least you've not been rendered speechless by what's going on in Huntington.
Hey, boy, see, yes, I saw those people behind him, and I'm gonna tell you, those were two women, or the ugliest women who ever walked the face of the earth. The red cap on the his extreme whatever in my TV screen, and the one next to her. And I'm going to tell you something. I have never seen such a pile of shit in my life.
Well, what about the guy in the red MAGA hat who was about to start speaking in tongues?
That's who I'm talking about, the one with the glasses and the red hat. That was a woman.
No, it's a guy.
No, okay.
Man, if we can't even agree who the Trump, oh man.
It's not about a disagreement, it's just perception. That's all there is to it.
You're talking about the one with the black t-shirt.
Yeah.
And the gold iPhone and the red MAGA hat and the big old mouth full of teeth.
and the who was texting all during the thing. It would be to have Trump's left or my right.
Yeah, over his left shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I assumed that was a guy. Because they planted,
you may be
they,
right.
They planted
you may
a couple
right,
of.
Bud.
They planted a couple of blondes. They planted a couple of blondes over his right shoulder into his immediate right.
Don't they ever? God. But nonetheless, yeah, that's just what I observed, and it just made me sick to see Jim. Oh, I don't even know Rustis or whatever his name is get up there, and you know transfer parties or whatever. But you know, nothing surprises me anymore. Nothing surprises me anymore at all.
So were you shocked, I tell you, shocked?
No,
by Justice's betrayal?
No, I was simply ashamed that a man like that could be even in public office because he's, I don't want to say anything about it because, let me put it this way, I just don't have a very high opinion of him. I never have, never will.
I trust you didn't vote for him.
Shit, no. Excuse me. Cap Butler, how I do talk.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, pursuant to Her Majesty, the Queen of England, think about this. Look at the genetic gene pool that she inherited from her mother. 104.
Well, true.
I mean, you know, she's well taken care of. I love her hats, and I really do admire the monarchy in such a way because it's so much more dignified than what we have now. It really is. I mean, our government is just an absolute. It's just worse than the pre-World War I Austro-Hungarian Parliament, in which they could throw bottles at each other from the, you know, and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's just, no, you don't know. It's what I know. It made me absolutely ashamed, number one, to live here, and number two, to be a citizen of this country, to see that we can have people like that in positions of authority. Can you imagine what they're saying in London, Berlin, Paris, Moscow? Oh, they're howling their asses off in Moscow. Or wherever Mr. Putin happens to be at this particular time of year. I would assume he's probably on the Black Sea.
I don't know. Do you think he takes 17-day vacations like Trump does? Do you think he's been golfing for 28 out of, what is it, 18 out of 28 weekends?
You know, he has his own schedule, as they would say. But I mean, who knows what Trump does in his private life? I know he's got some magnificent places in which he lived that were surpassed those of the late czars. But nonetheless, he—I don't think he really has to take vacations because he's got so many people under him that you know they're going to do his bidding because you know they really serve in his pleasure. I mean, not only is he a very wealthy man, he's probably wealthier than Bezos of Amazon, if the truth be known. But nonetheless, you know, he doesn't have to worry about anything like that. All he has to do is get up there and do what he has to do. And when he does what he has to do, he does it very well. Very well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good brutal dictator.
Well, he's good. He looked like Stalin was a good brutal dictator.
Precisely my point.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a relative use of the word good, but I understand. Yeah. He learned his craft well in KGB spook school.
Sure he did. And, of course, you know, he, as I told you before, has a lot of good maternal and fraternal roots back to the very beginning of the revolution 70-something years ago.
Hey, Jim, I gotta tell you this though. I'm just watching. I'm watching the end when Trump goes wandering around and clapping at the crowd.
Oh Lord!
Someone handed him. Someone handed him a license plate. Now this is a guy who describes himself as a notorious germaphobe, right?
Yeah.
Somebody in the audience in front of him handed him a West Virginia license plate that reads the number 4 and then TRUMP. He took it, he looked at it, he smiled approvingly, he turned around and posed with it for photographs. And then, Jim, then he kissed it.
Oh, good.
Maybe it has the President of the United States kissed a license plate.
Are you surprised?
No, because this is right up there with curtsying to the King of Saudi Arabia, for sake.
Well, you know, he's learned his craft well from those people. That's all there is to it. And all I can say was I was simply just ashamed that, number one, I live here, and if I can leave here, I will, and if I can leave this country, I will. And I have devoted most of my life into its service. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, it hurts. That was my point earlier. It hurts, doesn't it, Jim? It hurts.
I am ashamed to be an American. For the first time in my ever life, I am ashamed that we would put somebody like that in the White House and make of it just a complete travesty.
Well, and you can be equally ashamed that we have a Congress that, despite flagrant violations of the Constitution, will leave him in office.
Oh, well, what have I... Bob, how many times have I used about that term referencing where I used to live as a forbidden city?
And they're all just craven little mandarins, or at least the majority are.
And each one is going back to his district later on this month to have his own rice bowl filled, if not by his constituents, but by all the free money that's floating around that will ensure their re-election. It's just like Dr. Bryan said a couple of days ago. He said these people, they don't represent the people that elected them. They represent those people who can pay enough money and pull enough gerrymandering or enough whatever to get them put back in their seats of power. That's exactly what it is. I think that's what Dr. Bill tried to say. Now, maybe I misquoted him, but I think
you're pretty close.
I like Dr. Bill, and I enjoy what he has to say when I can listen to it. And what he says to me is extremely logical. It is very truthful, and unfortunately, it is extremely predictive.
And by the way, you got a note in from GK.
Hello?
Saying, I totally agree with Jim. If I could leave, I fucking would.
Bob, could you hold for one?
It sounds like you got company there. I've got other folks who want to get into
the
program.
I will. Okay.
Take care.
Take care, Jim.
Bye now. And when you get to the point where you say, if I could leave, I would, that's not something one says lightly. But this is becoming more... We're past the six-month mark. I've said before, it feels like 6 years. Sorry I'm not very funny tonight, if I ever am funny. Sorry. Not for being funny if I am, but for not being tonight. It's a painful thing to look up and say, hey, you know, if I could figure out a way out of here, I'd go. You know, we talked about the business with that the flap that America's the administration's youngest Nazi, Stephen Miller, the flap that he got into with Jim Acosta yesterday in the White House briefing. There was a dog whistle he used in that set to. He referred to something that Jim Acosta said. He said it betrayed his cosmopolitan bias. Had Jim not had to leave the conversation, I would have brought this up with him because I know that would have set off bells and sirens and alarms and flashing lights and sprinkler systems inside Jim's mind because he knows where that word comes from. Cosmopolitan is a word drawn straight from the American neo-Nazi movement. They use the word all the time over on neo-Nazi websites. They've got an entire philosophy page discussing and deconstructing what they call cosmopolitanism. Here's a quote from one of those pages. Confronted with the ruins of their culture and having been abandoned by the state which purports to represent them, white Americans will have to fall back on their inherited racial and ethnic identities. Only then will the historic American people find the strength to turn the tables on cosmopolitan elites. Used in that context, it's a whole lot of words for saying Jews. Cosmopolitans don't put their country first like nationalists do. David Duke has said that Jewish supremacists want everyone to be as mixed and as cosmopolitan as possible. Interesting word, cosmopolitan. That's not Latin, that's Greek. Cosmos and polis, city. A world city, in other words. A world community, recognizing that humanity is an admixture of all kinds of different people from all kinds of different places with all kinds of different ideas, traditions, histories. And so, therefore, that is the antithesis of what it is to be white and pure. I mentioned the article at Cosmopolitan Magazine over in my conversation with Scott, the one about Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, they had a breakdown of cosmopolitan too. This is straight out of the Breitbart Bannon playbook. Writing at Politico, Jeff Greenfield says, "So what is cosmopolitan? It's cousin to elitist, but with more sinister undertone. It's a way of branding people or movements that are unmoored to the traditions and beliefs of a nation and identify more with like-minded people in regardless of their nationality." In this sense, the revolutionary pamphleteer Thomas Paine might have been an early American cosmopolitan when he declared, "The world is my country, all mankind are my brethren, and to do good is my religion." In the eyes of their foes, cosmopolitans tend to cluster in the universities, the arts, and in urban centers where familiarity with diversity makes for a high comfort level with untraditional ideas and lives. For a nationalist, in other words, a Nazi, a white winger, whatever, these are fighting words. Your country is your country. Your fellow citizens are your brethren, and your country's traditions, religious or otherwise, should be yours. See, the United States doesn't really have any cultural traditions. Everything that's happening here has happened as a result of the arrival here of immigrants bringing ideas, which have then been mixed in with other ideas to come up with a sort of cultural gumbo that's everything and nothing. Stalin, another authoritarian dictator, used the word. He gave a speech in 1946 and said, "The positive Soviet hero is derided and inferior before all things foreign and cosmopolitanism that we all fought against from the time of Lenin, characteristic of the political leftovers, is many times applauded." This was part of Stalin's setup for purging writers, playwrights, scientists, poets, actors, musicians, who were deemed cosmopolitan because they had been subjected to bourgeois Western influences. Many of them were also Jewish. As I watched that live feed and we listened to it here, and I said, because there was no way to make the comments section go away. And we have a standing rule around here. Don't go into the comments. The vile, stinking, running sewer of racism and bigotry and homophobia was nonstop on that thing. Because that is who Trump's base are. Plain and simple. Oh, thank you. Thank you very kindly to Steve with a note said, "Last night was on Karen. This one's on me. Kicking in $20. In the name of all my friends and family in the Horn chat room." These are good folks in this chat room. Please let them know I made the donation in their name. Done, Steve. Done. Steve also said, "Hope you have an awesome vacation. Send pics. I'm going to the Grove Park Inn next week. I'll return the favor." I will. I'll be tweeting some photographs and Facebooking some photographs. I'm hoping we're going to have a wonderful time. Like I said, I hadn't planned it this way, but it starts with a funeral. And, well, after that, we'll try to change the tenor. So it's about 22 minutes before the hour. If you've got anything you'd like to say, you're welcome to say it. I have to confess, like I said, it's been a tough day. But you're all welcome to jump in, and with Steve's help, that means we've only got $80 to raise this evening to finish with Chris's challenge. And that would be mighty nice. We'll see what happens with the overnight crew, our subscribers. Maybe it'll come down some. And a reminder, you know, we'll have Friday on the front porch tomorrow evening. And see what happens from there. Oh, God. I just feel like I've had a big bucket of, after that business in Huntington, just a big bucket of poop thrown at me. Ugh. Oh, by the way, speaking of grand juries earlier, According to Reuters, grand jury subpoenas have been issued regarding that meeting that Uday and Jared and Paul Manafort attended, you know, along with five other people, Russians, with the that wasn't about what it was said to be about, even though the filth about Hillary started flowing in pretty close proximity to that meeting happening. Yeah. I wonder why a grand jury would want to see something like that. It just says grand jury subpoenas have been issued in conjunction with. So, once again, a pretty good idea of why we needed the diversion of this thing in Huntington this evening. Oh, and it's not Wednesday or anything, but still, a story from Newsweek. A poll came out from the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation today. It was a poll of 1,686 American adults. It sought the answer to a question. Polls do that. The question was this: if somebody's poor, is it because they haven't made a sufficient effort, or because they have been a victim of circumstances beyond their control? I guess it's kind of like asking, is Donald Trump a serial liar, or is he just unable to remember the lies he tells anymore? Interesting question, though. You know, you get the you've got the quest, the core question that you want answered, but data without data within it becomes sort of meaningless. So you have to find out who's answering your questions. Well, in this poll, they asked things like, are you a Christian? Or are you religious? Well, here's the upshot. You wonder why we are the way we are. You want to see, I mean, we've made a lot of, not sport, but we've pointed out over the years, people like John Hagee sitting down, and that's pretty much how he has to preach now. He's slightly less mobile than Jim Justice. He's the one that goes into the pulpit and says, if a man will not work, he shall not eat. Starve! And then he crams another donut in his face, as if preaching was working. That miserable bastard hasn't clothed the naked person or housed the homeless or visited someone in prison. God knows he doesn't visit people in prison. Well, his worldview is winning. Out of the 1,686 American adults who were asked what causes a person to be poor, Christians, you know, followers of the Prince of Peace, Christians are far more likely than non-Christians to say that poverty is a result of individual shortcomings. And if we can say generally that Christians are more likely to say that, we can say with greater specificity, or the new term we're bandied about now is more granularity, we can say that white evangelical Christians are really likely to think that somebody's poor because they're not working hard enough. Albert Moeller is the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. The Washington Post called him up and he said, "There's a strong Christian impulse to understand poverty as deeply rooted in morality, often, as the Bible makes clear, in unwillingness to work, in bad financial decisions, or in broken family structures. The Christian worldview is saying that all poverty is due to sin, though that doesn't necessarily mean the sin of the person in poverty. In the Garden of Eden, there would have been no poverty. In a fallen world, there is poverty." Poll was taken from April 13th to May the 1st. It's got a sample. It's got a margin of error of plus or minus 4 percentage point. 46% of all Christians said that not working hard enough at it is generally to blame for a person being poor. Only 29% of non-Christians said that. Oh, but the numbers then change when you start splitting out denominations. 53% of white evangelical Protestants said it was because people didn't work hard enough that they were poor. You ever wonder why I call them evangelicals instead of evangelicals? There you go. 50%, just slightly less, 50% of Roman Catholics said people are poor because they're not working hard enough. Yeah. On the other hand, Americans who are atheist, agnostic, or have no particular religious affiliation, by 2-1, said tough circumstances are more to blame than lack of effort for a person's poverty. I'm in that camp because I live in a poor state, and I see poor people working their asses off. Whether they're Trump voters or not, they work their asses off. It is hard, goddamn work being poor. Because no matter how much you work, you can't work enough to take care of all your basic needs. You have two jobs, three. But the paychecks are always still scrawny. And all it takes, and your one big bill away from complete and total disaster. And that is the majority, not just of West Virginians, but of Central Appalachia. Remember, this is West Virginia. We've got one billionaire, and his name's Jim Justice. Not room for a whole lot of billionaires here. But there's always been room for poor folks. But there's poverty, and there's poverty. My ancestors were poor as Job's turkey and brokered in the Ten Commandments, I guess by our standards. No fancy house, but it kept the wind out in the winter and the heat out in the summer for the most part. But my great-grandfather had grapevines, had grape arbors, had apple orchards, peach orchards, plums. He was a farmer. He raised wheat, he raised rye, he raised barley, raised alfalfa for hay. Raised corn, potatoes, beans, squash, tomatoes, okra. Down in a little hidden dell, sheltered 365 days a year from the blistering heat of the sun, sheltered as well from the worst of the winds of winter, he had a spring house. Spring bubbled up from the earth, crystal clear. pure, sweet water bubbled through that house, and that's where they kept the milk and the eggs and the cheese. And he didn't have much money at all. But he made enough to send his eldest daughter to the local normal school to teach her to be a teacher. And then when she started teaching, she turned around and paid for her sister to go and learn to be a teacher. And that one paid for the next one. Through four women. And I guess by almost any metric, he was poor. A whole lot of my family is like that in generations past. They only get really, really ass-busting, gut-grinding poor when they get driven off the land, driven away from that self-sufficient agrarian economy, and driven into the not-so-tender mercies of the coal industry. And that's when that stuff starts showing up that I've talked about in the family history. Lonnie died in the mines. Leon killed on the railroad. The man who was 74, 76 years old, still working as best he could to eke out a living as a carpenter, and fell off a roof and died and snapped his neck and broke his back and died a week later in hopeless agony. Obviously, according to these Christians in this study, this survey, none of those people worked hard enough. And yet, there is enough wealth in this country to keep anyone from being poor. But it would be necessary for a few people who are obscenely wealthy to become a little tiny itsy bitsy bit less wealthy for us to keep everybody from being poor. And to them and to the Christians, it's just not worth it. Stephen New York points out, meanwhile, Jesus was a poor and homeless preacher wandering Palestine. Behold, the Son of Man hath no place to lay his head. Sorry, I didn't mean to turn this back into Wednesday. But they did it, not me. People who worship a poor man say that being poor is the poor man's fault. Yeah, you know, if Jesus had only been a hedge fund manager, he could have had some really nice digs up on the Palatine Hill in Rome, and he wouldn't have had to ever go amongst the wouldn't have had to heal any lepers or any of that shit. It's his own fault. And him, the Son of God. The nerve of him. Jack in Shreveport said, where were you looking for the Trump comments and so forth? Blog, MSNBC? No, I was watching it live on YouTube, and it was on the YouTube page, and Jesus jumping Christ. Oh, I'm going to be showering with bleach. Jack continues, also, great show tonight. Really like the topics. No matter how much I tell myself not to, I go back again and again at trying to figure out the psyche of the Trump voter. Why ask why? Drink Bud Dry. I know, it's irresistible, isn't it? Because we think if we can figure them out, that maybe we can help them, what, come to their senses? And that's just our nature. But to be brutally honest, it's not true. Because the answers are simple. They really are as simple as they seem. We're talking about mean people. And they'll take any fig leaf that they can get to cover up their unmitigated goddamn meanness. They're mean because they think that somebody's getting something that they're not. Life is a zero-sum game, and, well, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world. And the Alpo undershorts are for somebody else. And when you provide a convenient excuse to a bunch of people who have mean, shitty attitudes to begin with, they will do whatever that person wants them to do. So that's it. Not my best program. The technical bullshit messed with my head. I apologize for that. And, yeah, circumstances themselves were, of the day, were not so great. But we got Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Plan on being here. It's our last chance to talk. It's the last chance to have the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable for a while. While I pursue the elusive vacation, I hope you'll join in. I hope along the way we'll scare up another $80 or so, so that we're just at a nice flush $200 tomorrow evening. That'll be nice, too. Remember, there's a subscription drive going on over at patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. If you're already a subscriber, don't move. Just stay where you are. But if you would like to subscribe and not have to deal with PayPal, that's a good way to do it. Okay? Thanks always to everybody who keeps all of this going. Thank you ever so kindly. Thank you for helping to make it possible for me to get a little break for the first time in 12 years. Agnes and I are looking forward to it. Thank you to all of you who spend your time engaged in our conversation in whatever way you do it. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Steve from Georgistan, midweek utility pinch hit, all-around great guy chat room moderator. Thank you. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. The White Rose Society will be alive and kicking for another month, thanks to y'all. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Night Sweet Prince and Flights of Angels. Sing thee to thy rest. Good night, y'all.